Hello, everyone. I'm Dana Perino, along with Judge Jeanine Pirro, Jonathan Turley, Jesse Waters, and Greg Gutfeld. It's 5 o'clock in New York City, and this is The 5. A Category 5 salacious storm hitting the Trump trial. Jurors finally getting to hear from adult film actress Stormy Daniels after she gave testimony so raunchy it would make a porn star blush and the media laugh.
My basic feeling is like, wow, this is a colorful, maybe hyper-colorful witness.
Daniels says she told Trump of the magazine, someone should spank you with that. I'm sorry, Anthony.
He was wearing silk or satin pajamas.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I just had to laugh.
I can't believe I have to read this on television. It's not going to involve any descriptions.
Better you than me, Jim.
And it's not going to involve any descriptions of anything in particular. So
just read it.
Stormy Daniels is at the heart of Alvin Bragg's falsified business records case against Donald Trump, and today she described in great detail the alleged sexual encounter in 2006 that the former president denies ever took place. Her account was so tawdry that Trump's lawyers called for a mistrial, arguing it was designed to inflame the jury and embarrass the former president. But the judge slapped down the motion. Here is the former president.
A very big day, a very revealing day. As you see, their case is totally falling apart. They have nothing on books and records, and even something that should bear very little relationship to the case. It's just a disaster. For the Soros-backed DA, it's a disaster.
Donald Trump would certainly like to respond to Stormy's racy testimony, but he can't. That's because of the gag order that the judge says could result in jail time the next time he breaks it. Speaking of which, some in the liberal press can't help but envision what prison would look for from the former president. Watch.
This is not a mugshot. This is jail. And Donald Trump is terrified. You've got to believe just by his issues with odors and smells.
The idea that Donald Trump actually would want to go to jail is ridiculous. He doesn't even like to stay in a hotel.
I think to make a point, to prove a point, put him in the clink. Put him in the clink.
I don't want this to sound like I'm doing wishful thinking.
Yes.
But which prison would be best?
That's one.
I'm going to give you Michael. Well, that's what I asked. Number one, I'm okay if he goes to Alcatraz and they reopen it. What about Guantanamo Bay?
Okay, Jonathan Turley, thank you for being here again. Take us through this whole situation today.
Well, it was a bizarre situation because you had the defense tell the judge, this is going to happen if you put her on the stand with these broad parameters. It happened. And then the judge said, well, I may ask the jury to forget that it happened. And how are they going to forget that? It's not like you're asking them to forget some CPA's testimony about a notation in a ledger, right? And the troubling thing about this is that they lit a dumpster fire in this courtroom, and the defense asked for the mistrial, and the judge blamed the defense attorneys. And so I can only imagine standing there, and it must have been difficult not to say, I'm sorry, Judge, I'm the attorney that told you not to put her on the stand. I told you that you had too broad of parameters. And then when she did exactly as we suggested you did, you ignore that I have a standing objection to her saying anything in this trial. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, Merchant got what all of us expected. Now, this idea that he can make this cat walk backwards is going to be rather difficult. You know, you've already, you know, had this witness go into every detail. You know, short, including whether the president wears boxer shorts that he had Old Spice in his bathroom. I mean, that's the level of absurd detail. I mean, we've all seen Greg's office with the gallon of Old Spice, but we don't mention it. Mm-hmm. But this is a show. But the fact that you would bring in that type of just completely immaterial detail shows how this judge was a mere pedestrian in his courtroom. And then at the end of all of that, to say, God, he literally said, it would have been better if that testimony didn't occur. And you're just sort of looking around like you were the one that allowed this testimony to occur.
And I can't imagine being someone on the jury. I did read at one point one of the reporters said, or I think it was one of our producers said, that One of the jurors, a woman, had her head in her hands, but I cannot believe that we're having to listen to this.
Interesting. I'm glad to hear that. I wish it were in the courtroom. In fact, I'll be in the courtroom on Thursday and Friday. But look, the testimony that we heard today has absolutely nothing to do with the indictment. The testimony was irrelevant. It was prejudicial. It was not probative. It has nothing to do with how something was filed and how reimbursement to Cohen and whether it was correctly entered in the books. Period. End of the story. This judge saying to the defense attorney, well, you know, you didn't object enough. Look, any judge worth his or her salt, if you see something happening that is going to jeopardize the conviction, you yourself, sua sponte, on your own, will say, I'm going to stop the line of questioning right here. And then what you do is you call the parties to the bench and you say to the defense, to the prosecution, you are moving too close to reversible error here. Let's, like, trim the offenses here a little bit. But Mershon, and, you know, I heard one person say on Fox, oh, he's a really experienced judge. He's a fool. He's not an experienced judge the way he's doing this. For him to say, please keep your answers short and listen to the questions while she is laying out what could be another prosecutable offense against Donald Trump that I'm not even going to mention, he is allowing reversible error in. He should have said, I'm going to strike that testimony. There should have been a curative instruction right then and there on the spot. But instead, he says, well, I'll think about it, you know, make a request at the time of charge, at the time of my charge. No. And then he sends the jury out and lays out the prosecutor for allowing this testimony in. This judge is either all in on convicting Trump, irrespective of whether it's going to be reversed. And I would bet my house this will be reversed by the Court of Appeals.
One of the things, though, that Greg, is that even if it is reversed, it wouldn't be until after the election. And what they are hoping for is a conviction so that Joe Biden can say in all of the ads and at the debate, oh, well, you're talking about a convicted felon.
What are the odds that an incident from 15 to 20 years ago would now become the object of litigation just months before an election? It's kind of a strange coincidence that the media doesn't really seem to focus on. That might be one question that would make you go, maybe this is political. I got to say, I love how CNN anchors blush and are shocked by pajamas and spanking. I mean, one of your employees pleasured himself on Zoom. You kept him on there. One of your producers, I think, was arrested for grooming kids.
Yep.
It's funny watching the media act like Puritans, right? Go to any media event, and it's like the Playboy Mansion with ugly people. So it's like, it's just, they got the paws all over you. They're drunk. This is porn for sexless Democrats. Listening to testimony from an aging sex worker about Trump in a courtroom, you have everything. It's almost as erotic as listening to NPR while feeding grapes to your cat with myocarditis. The court case is really about convincing jurors that Trump is a bad guy for sleeping around. It's not about breaking laws because no laws were broken. If Trump were a woman, the prosecution would be accused of slut shaming. Huh? That's quite a theory. Again, he's not charged for the hush money. It's not about Stormy. It's about an accounting method for a legal payment for in a business record that had no known category. That's it. What Stormy has to do with it is nothing. All that is frosting for the media.
Jesse Waters, give you last word.
Fact check, Trump does not use Old Spice. He has his own deodorant line. It's called Success. Someone gifted it to me at a book signing. And Turley, cats can walk backwards. I don't know about that analogy. Michael Avenatti dropped a bombshell from behind bars today, and take it for what it's worth. I'm just conveying what he said. He made an allegation that a producer wanted to do a documentary on Stormy Daniels and called him on a recorded line and said, would you like to participate? And he said, well, I don't know. Is she getting paid for the documentary? Because if she is, it's probably not fair and I'm not going to do it. And the producer says, yeah, she is going to get paid for the documentary, but that's because she owes Trump hundreds of thousands of dollars in judgment. And she's just trying to make ends meet. But she has a way of concealing the money from Trump's lawyers. What they're going to do is, and what they have done, Michael says, is that they have optioned the rights to her book. They've taken the proceeds and set up a fraudulent LLC under Stormy's daughter's name, and that's how they're going to hide the money from Trump's lawyers.
Amazing.
If this is true, then she's guilty of bad record keeping fraud. So I don't know if that's going to be pursued by Alvin Bragg. Probably not. But Trump is barreling towards breaking this gag order. I don't see within the next 48 hours how he does not do it. You're saying you can't criticize the government? That's what the judge is saying. You cannot criticize the government, the court, or the prosecution, let alone an American citizen. This guy's the Republican nominee for president. Not only he can't criticize the government, he's not inciting violence. He's not making false statements. He has an opinion about the government that's being controlled by his political rival that's prosecuting him. Now, if you can't criticize the government or have an opinion about the government, then you're not in America. And that's insane. And we also just found out this guy, Colangelo, the lead prosecutor, who was Biden's number three guy at the Department of Justice, was a paid consultant for the Democrat National Committee. Mm-hmm. And he's an Obama donor. So Obama donating DNC consultant, former Biden prosecutor, is leading the charge in this courtroom. And the Democrats say this isn't political. And maybe you guys can answer this question for me. How are they only giving Trump's lawyers 24 hours to prepare for these witnesses?
It's unheard of. It is unheard of.
I need at least 5 hours to prepare for this show.
And you don't even do it.
It's unfair. I don't see how they can get away with sandbagging them like that.
Well, we could go on and on. The case, the court will not be in session tomorrow. Then Thursday, Friday. Yeah, I know you're bummed about that. Okay, up next, President Biden finally gives a forceful speech on anti-Semitism while anti-Israel agitators burn an American flag on their way to the Met Gala.
If you have chronic kidney disease.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Only took him 9 days in a campus caliphate to emerge, but Joe Biden forcefully condemned anti-Semitism today, calling out Hamas standing up for Jewish students.
People are already forgetting. They're already forgetting that Hamas unleashed this terror. It was Hamas that brutalized Israelis. On college campuses, Jewish students blocked, harassed, attacked while walking to class. Anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitic posters, slogans, calling for the annihilation of Israel, the world's only Jewish state. It's absolutely despicable, and it must stop. Violent attacks, destroying property, is not peaceful protest. It's against the law.
Finally. Meanwhile, from the river to the red carpet, over 1,000 anti-Israel protesters looking absolutely stunning in their keffiyeh scarves as they tried to crash fashion's biggest night, the Met Gala. Sadly, the chic agitators were blocked by cops looking tasteful in blue from reaching the star-studded soiree. Denied entry, but undeterred in their cause, these fashion-forward activists opted to give a World War I memorial a criminal makeover by vandalizing it with graffiti reading Gaza in large black letters. They also burned an American flag, no surprise. Let's go now to liberal heavyweight Michael Moore, who is weighing in on the protests.
I applaud every student who's taken a stand on their campus, at graduation, whatever. This is the purpose of a democracy. Nonviolently disrupt. And when I'm talking about nonviolence, I'm not talking about, you do have the right to take over the administration building. So you have to take over buildings. That is not violence.
You know, Judge, he said he would want to take over the buildings with him, but he can't make it up the stairs. I thought that was kind of sad. You know, I have to say that was a strong comment by Joe Biden, but it took him a long time to get there. Should we hold that against him?
Yes.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something else. You know, he's good at reading. He reads and you think, oh, you know, he's coming around. He gets it. Here's the thing. He's a vessel. He is a vessel who literally says whatever they tell him to say and whatever they give him to read. But when he was answering directly on his way to Marine One, that is when he said, you know, there is no place for hate speech or anti-Semitism. And on the fly, he said, and I condemn those who don't understand the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. That's the true Joe Biden, who makes the moral equivalence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's anti-Semitism, it's Islamophobia. He doesn't believe what he's reading. That's not the real man. And the second thing is Michael Moore saying, oh, okay, go and take over buildings. That's criminal trespass. That's burglary. The guy knows nothing about the law. And in the end, they are using this free speech as an opportunity to literally shut everybody else up or either disrupt the campus or disrupt our lives. And it's not going to stop, by the way.
You know, Jonathan, it seems like since the George Floyd protests, I conflated words, that defacing monuments, tearing them down, is now actually incorporated into speech. Will there be any punishment or anything? I mean, that is actually criminal behavior, what they did. It's repulsive as well.
Not if history is any lesson. Mm-hmm. No, that these charges haven't been coming. And, of course, it's not free speech. Mm-hmm. Free speech generally ends when the criminal code begins. Mm-hmm. And what's really troubling about a lot of this stuff is to see the extent of the radicalization of students. Many of us have been complaining about this for years. You know, in my own campus this weekend, students were, a video surfaced where students were calling for a guillotine to chop the heads off the president and provost. Now, they thought that was funny. But it sort of captured how radical the rhetoric has become. But, you know, when you look at something like the monuments of the 107th Infantry from World War One, and you think about the sacrifice that they made and the sense of license that these students have, there is this disconnect that they're not only unfamiliar with what free speech really means, but they're unfamiliar with what sacrifice really means. Mm-hmm. And it's really troubling when you see Columbia just canceled their graduation.
Yeah.
And it was an act of academic cowardice. They said, look, these security concerns are insurmountable. Really? This is your campus. Mm-hmm. These are your students. Hold the damn graduation. Mm-hmm. Now, Michigan did that, and they interrupted it, but they held their commencement.
You're right.
And so what these students are hearing from these administrators is reinforcing this madness that we are experiencing on campus. And those of us that have to work on the campus have seen this for years. Mm-hmm. And this is the product of enabling these students. They think that they are right to silence others, destroy monuments, because they've been taught that.
Yeah, it comes from their instructors. Jesse, how come the media finds it beneath them to follow the money, like on who's funding this? If this was an anti-Muslim movement, Washington Post, The New York Times, CNN, MSNBC would be leading the charge.
Greg, they were combing through papers for 20 years of trying to find Russian money that went to Trump. Mm-hmm. They never found it. They never found a single foreign connection between Russia and the Trump campaign. And now there's money coming from overseas, from radical Muslim outfits. We've already figured it out. It's the Rockefellers, it's Soros, it's the Pritzkers in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And what happens is these kids are loaded up with CRT in high school. So they're all tuned up when they go in freshman year. And then you get these radical faculty members that tell them that the world consists of victims and victimizers. So they're all ready. And then an event happens, like a George Floyd or an invasion or anything. And then all of a sudden, this money pours into these left-wing outfits, and there's actual revolutionaries that then descend onto the campus and train these kids how to fight cops and train them on riot tactics. And this is where we are right now. It's very similar to the way Muslims are radicalized in the Mideast. You get them young, disenchanted, upset with the status quo, single. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you just blow their brains open with propaganda. And then what do you know? They rage. I used to live near that monument, the World War I one on the Upper East Side. I used to sit and look at it and read about it. It's just sad. Mm-hmm. We had a senior from Columbia and her dad on the show last night. She said after October 7th on campus, before Israel even struck back.
Yeah.
Students were all like, yeah, Hamas, anti- Israel hadn't even responded, and they were pro-Hamas. She said she saw ISIS flags, Nazi flags. The stuff she heard was crazy, and she's a straight-A student. She had an academic award, and she's so discouraged because she feels like when she hands an employer her resume and it says Columbia, they're going to discriminate against her.
Yeah, just say it's the country. That's what I do, Dana. I have to commend the police. They did an excellent job protecting the Met Gala. But it is interesting how well protected the Met Gala was,
yes,
as opposed to so many other. We have our bridges blocked. We have our tunnels blocked. But God forbid you interfere with the Met Gala.
Or, like, you can protect the Met Gala, but you can't protect Columbia's graduation.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. But that's Columbia's decision.
Yeah.
Right? That's not the NYPD's decision.
True.
And so the Met Gala, they're smart. They're like, let's utilize the NYPD because they know what they're doing to work with our security. I want to say something about Michael Moore. So he says, yeah, you have a right to do this. You got to check this out. I'm hoping that we can get it on the show tomorrow. There's a woman named Francesca Block. She works for the Free Press. She's a young woman who found the janitor who was held against his will at Columbia, ooh, by those protesters at Hamilton Hall. And the guy who was arrested is 40 years old. He's not a student. He is a trust fund kid. Doesn't have a job. His job is the protest. $2.3 million brownstone that he owns in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And Mr. Torres, who was the janitor who was held there, and he said the school left them defenseless. They had to figure out a way to protect themselves. He noticed that the cameras had been covered. He said that they had a plan, that they came in and they swarmed. They had the zip ties. And that's not even a student.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Moore thinks that this is okay, that this is appropriate. And this guy now, he says, and you guys would love this guy. If you go on the Free Press and look at this interview that he did all the right things. In 2017, he found out he was going to be a dad. He got a good job with benefits. He got a shift that worked for him to be able to help take care of his family. If the kids were off school or if they got sick, it worked for him. He says he loves his job. He loves it, but he doesn't know if he can go back. He's afraid the university will retaliate against him. And he's not sure if they will protect him going forward. He said, and they're still there.
Interesting developments. Is he good at math?
We could, yes.
Why?
I'm just
guessing.
Just
a reference to Goodwill Hunting. All right, coming up, her MAGA meal made her squeal. A former CNN reporter haunted after having dinner with secret Trump supporters.
It was just a regular Monday.
This is a Fox News alert. Donald Trump's classified documents trial in Florida has been postponed. It was set to begin at the end of this month, but with New York DA Alvin Bragg's case ongoing, he can't be in two places at the same time. Judge Eileen Cannon has not set a new start date. The trial will still happen. We just don't know when. Now on to this. It's Trump derangement syndrome on steroids. Ex-CNN reporter Michelle Kaczynski posting a deranged set of tweets about a horrific dinner she had with closeted Trump supporters. She starts it off by saying, quote, all were well-educated and successful in careers, but slowly, over a few drinks, they began to let slip their true MAGA natures. When they realized that a few in their presence came armed with gasp. Actual facts, no. They quickly changed the subject and nervously said they don't want to talk politics. They realized they would be eviscerated on all idiotic points, especially the economy. This dinner continues to haunt me. They all seem so normal. And if you think that's unhinged, listen to what Congresswoman Maxine Waters just said.
What they're going to do to protect this country against violence if he loses. I want to know about all of those right-wing organizations that he's connected with who are training up in the hills somewhere and targeting, what communities they're going to attack. We need to know what his plan is and how we're going to be protected.
Oh, Greg, I got to go to you with this. I mean, up in the hills, they're preparing to attack.
This explains everything. That's where the white supremacists have been hiding.
Oh.
This is why the government couldn't find them. They're hiding in the mountains, in the trees. We've been looking for them everywhere. We look for the military. We look for them in the media. Where are they? Oh, geez. The problem is, Liberals are having a problem because the desire for white supremacy exceeds the actual supply. They saw Jussie Smollett as proactive. He couldn't find any racists, so he created some of his own. Meanwhile, within their ranks, they have anti-Semitic, anti-white, basically anti-West, anti-American people spreading hate. But they prefer to seek the fantasy of white supremacy. I love the Kaczynski stuff. Is that her name? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Whenever you lose a job, do not go on Twitter. Because, like, she shouldn't have been. Exactly. She was probably buzzed. But she was horrified having dinner with what is essentially half of America. She's a poster child for the bubble-wrapped elitist, priding herself on facts without ever having to show you them. She doesn't have to. What are her facts exactly on economy, crime, the border, whatever? She provides exactly what the media, what we see in the media and why CNN is unsavable. They are dying because they thought they were smarter than everybody else. You could almost hear her saying, what are these people doing near me? How do they get so close to me? I hope I don't catch anything. Ew, gross. But you know what? They're so some of them are smart or wise. Like, she's shocked that somebody smart is disagreeing with her. You know, she said, oh, my favorite part is she says that they don't want to talk politics because they know she would eviscerate them. No, they don't want to talk politics with you because you're an obnoxious, pompous ass.
Okay.
But not bad looking.
And that brings me to Dana. In addition to the obnoxious pompous, why is it that Democrats are all in lockstep? I mean, you've got Barack Obama, the Republicans that cling to God and their guns or religion and their guns were deplorables. You know, basically, we're not normal.
I think this is a strange thing because I think a lot of liberals think that Republicans are in lockstep and Republicans think that about liberals. And the truth is most people are just normal and they don't have political things in their life. I can't for the life of me understand why she posted this. Mm-hmm. It was weeks after or months after, like, the actual thing happened. I don't think it's the flex that she thought it was, because she's saying it's unhealthy to be among them. No, it's unhealthy to not be amongst people who would maybe have a different idea. And also, maybe listen. Besides that, she said that she mentions the economy, climate change, and Ivy League education. She's in the minority on those issues. Her viewpoint, if you look at polls, it's where most of America is. So she's basically saying, I'm an elitist. I just want to eat amongst elitists. I don't want to be around anybody else. And it's not the flex that she thinks it is to have posted all of this.
Yeah. And it's Jonathan, it's classic groupthink.
Well, I think it's telling when you say people didn't want to talk to me.
Yes.
You know, because you see that a lot on subways where people say, why are you walking away from me? You know, and it's probably because you're screaming at me. And,
yeah.
You know, so I don't really judge them for saying maybe we should talk about the Cubs or the Mets. But the interesting thing about this, I think, which was raised, is that she really was talking to half the country.
Mm-hmm.
But it really captures this fact that many people in this country are in this echo chamber, and when they finally meet someone on the other half, the other 50%, they're shocked. And look, when I grew up in Chicago, the first Republican I ever met was when I went to college. I was told they existed, but I called my parents and said, I just met a Republican, you know? And these can be really insular communities, but it's gotten worse to the point that if you suspect that somebody's in that 50%, you are somehow in danger. That this is somehow someone who is unstable. Instead of doing what I think Dana really raised, this was a great opportunity to actually listen, to figure out why highly educated people don't share your views.
But instead, what does she do? She goes on X and tweets about it, because that's what they do.
And that's safe.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jesse?
I was at a party in the Hamptons a couple years ago, and everybody knows it's a liberal area.
Yeah.
And so we're all in the pool hanging out. Everyone was having a great time. And then all of a sudden, these two girls that were there, they were having a great time. We caught them going over to the side, and we overheard them. One girl goes to the other girl, I think these people are Republicans. And it was like we were from outer space.
How could they tell?
Maybe it was the things we were saying.
Yeah. They only did the backstroke.
Yeah. But do you remember that live shot on the Today Show years ago where there was a storm and there was a reporter in a canoe?
Yes.
That was Michelle Kaczynski.
Yes, it was.
And it was about maybe 6 inches of water.
Yeah.
And she's in a canoe.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, Lauer's like, oh, wow, must be pretty. And all of a sudden you see a bunch of firemen walking past her like, he's like, wait a second. And she was, you know what? That's what these people do. They can't play it straight. They just have to lie.
Okay. All right. Coming up, Democrats say the dumbest things. Kathy Hochul. That was a generalization. Kathy Hochul makes a shockingly racist remark about young black kids.
Hey, you singing this?
Take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride. Yeah. Till I can.
So what in the world was she thinking? Democratic New York Governor Kathy Hochul is under fire after making this offhand remark.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things.
As you can imagine, Governor Hochul is furiously running back those comments. She told the New York Post, quote, I misspoke and I regret it. And of course, black children in the Bronx know what computers are. Well, people, yeah. Do you agree with that? Or have you found...
I'm going to defend her in two ways. One, I think that when she was called out on it, she immediately said, I regret it. I misspoke. I shouldn't have said that. Of course, they know computers. Okay, so I think, one, that's interesting. You don't see that a lot in politicians taking responsibility for things that they wrote or didn't write or didn't say. There's also the fact that there are times when you use exaggeration and hyperbole when you are giving an answer to try to make a point. She was basically trying to say that these kids in the Bronx, in this area, need more time and attention and resources in order to be competitive for the job market that they will enter into in the future. And we want them to be productive citizens, and therefore we should do X, Y, and Z. And she could add, how about going after the teachers union? That would be something productive that they could do. So I think that when you're doing interviews like that and you're just thinking off the top of your head, you sometimes can make a mistake, but at least she owned up to it.
Well, why pick computers since kids today are virtually born with a TikTok, identity and a full computer array? It seems the last thing that I would pick for this generation is being unaware of.
Well, clearly she's not very bright. She was obviously elected because of her looks. but you know what? I agree with Dana. She's being hoisted on her own petard. Not sure what that means. Never looked it up. But Republicans have always been targeted for their hyperbole. And like every Democrat and liberal can read your mind about the things you say when Trump says they're not sending their best. The libs say, oh, he's talking about all Mexicans. Or when he says China virus, oh, he's talking about Chinese people and not the government or not the criminals that are being sent here from other countries. So they always, always take hyperbole literally. We're generally better people. I say generally, not uniformly, but generally. So I could say, like you, clearly she was using hyperbole. So I would grant her the allowance, even though she, the partisan dimwit that she is, would never do the same for you or me.
Yep.
If any of us said what she had said, it would be a nonstop news cycle featuring these sputtering, teary-eyed lefties. And, of course, Jesse would apologize.
Well, you know what's amazing is that studies have shown that 90% of people do not know what hoisting on your petard is.
Yeah.
So
I have my petard.
It has to do something with a ship.
No.
Judge?
I disagree. Because I read the statement. She said it three times. But she actually says, young black kids growing up in the Bronx don't even know what the word a computer is, one. They don't know, two. They don't know these things, three. Okay, so she said it three times. This was not a slip. To me, it's degrading, it's dehumanizing, and it's racist, okay? I think it's inappropriate. And the truth is the Senate and the Assembly people in her own party are not forgiving her for this. And it's an additional slap in the face to the minority community who all over New York State is having to take a second seat to the illegals who were coming in, getting cash, getting phones and everything else. So, and plus think about it. During the pandemic, if she believes that, and I think she does because she said it three times, how did these kids, did she worry about the fact that these kids, because the teachers weren't in school, couldn't sign on to a computer for remote learning?
But you know who I blame? Tech support. You know, the fact that she has tech support, she's never had to do what all of us do, which is if you have a computer problem at my age, I look for someone one-third my age, and they will take care of any problem. That's the problem.
Yeah, black kids in the Bronx know more about computers than the governor.
That's
She's
right.
about 70. She knows nothing. If you give her a computer, she'll log on and bring back a virus. If Democrats continue to do this, I'm going to have to stop making grand sweeping generalizations about race and gender, because Michelle Obama used to do this all the time. It's easier to get a gun than a vegetable in the hood. You know, she's always like, oh, it's easier to get a gun than a book in the Bronx. Like, they cartoonishly make generalizations about large swaths of people. I just think you need a little more nuance, like I do.
Yes, you're really good at doing that.
I'm
yes,
Mr. Nuance.
Yeah, when yes, I think nuance, I think Jesse. That's absolutely correct.
Nuance is
all right,
not a
coming up next, Kristi Noem has company. There's another vice presidential hopeful boasting about, you guessed it, killing an animal.
Let's get started. Bill.
The Trump Veep Stakes might have a new political litmus test. Which animal have you snuffed out? North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum's explaining how to murder a rattlesnake.
You stun them, then you go there, and then you step on their head with your boot, and then you just pull on the back, and then their head comes off.
Dana, rattlesnake different than a dog.
Yeah. So when I was a kid growing up, and we would be on the ranch for the summer, for example, my grandfather, Perino, he unfortunately died in 2001, but I'll never forget, drilled into our heads. I was the oldest grandkid. I was supposed to be on the watch. If you ever saw a rattlesnake, or you immediately had to run and get an adult. And I also remember at one point, I was leading the kids around my uncle's trailer. We're going around and around and around. And all of a sudden, one of the dogs starts crying. Her name is Robin.
Aww.
Bit by a rattlesnake.
Aww.
And Robin, unfortunately, passed away. And my uncle was such a good shot. He got underneath and he shot the rattlesnake. Now, he didn't shoot the dog. The dog had been bit by the rattlesnake, so that's why the rattlesnake had to get it. So that, and thank goodness none of us kids were bit by the same snake.
Janine wants to know if they made a handbag out of the snake skin.
I already bought it.
You know who's most
I didn't.
You know who's most traumatized by this story? It's Mark Rubio's cat. I mean, as everyone lines up for pet shooting as a qualification, I imagine that cat just steps on the remote every time the news comes on. You know, could you imagine the stress of that cat?
He just walks backwards out of the room.
I have no idea if he has a cat.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say, how do you know this?
I have no idea.
Big cat guy, Rubio. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that. Greg.
Yeah, you know, all I want to add is that the dog shooter, Kristi Noem, canceled on me this morning.
How dare you?
Yeah, just a minute after she was on Stuart Varney's show. And it bummed me out because I actually read her book. I rarely do that. I actually spent the weekend reading her book, and then she bails on me, and all I got to say is, you know, life's a bitch, but it doesn't mean you can shoot it. So we're going ahead. We're going to go ahead with the actual book segment. We're going to have a special episode, and we're having a very special guest play Ms. Noem on the show.
Oh, I wonder who that is. We'll have to watch.
Yeah. You will have to watch, because it's going to be, you know what sucks about it, and then I'll shut up. If she had done my show, it would have helped her because we're a fun show. She could have cracked some jokes, but she cut and she run and she blamed it on the weather.
Oh,
a minute after the Varney show and she blamed it on the weather.
Oh, was it like 80 and sunny today?
No, it's not a tease. I didn't say anything yet.
Oh, you say something.
Okay. If Kristi Noem comes around, what you need to do is just yell, hide your dog, hide your goat. Hide all animals. It's Kristi Noem.
I'm so glad you got the last word.
Yeah.
One more thing's up next.
And now my bitter hands beneath the clouds.
Americans turn to RV.
All right.
It's time now for one more thing. Jesse.
Okay. We're just going to promote the show, Jesse Waters Primetime. FBI's most wanted con man tonight at 8 o'clock.
Wow. All right. And great.
Yes. All right. Tonight, I already plugged it. Going to plug it again. Ooh, we have Dana Perino, Michael Loftus, Kat Timpf, Tyrus, and the ghost of Christy Gnome. Tonight
and
at 10.
And the judge.
Hide your dogs.
It's your turn.
I know it's my turn. I can't find it.
Okay. Then I'm going to go. All right. Across the student. No, I can't. I can't even think straight. But as you know, a lot of people are getting ready to graduate. And if you're looking for the perfect gift, 2024, you can check out the littlepointbookshop.com. There's an exclusive offer. I will personalize the book for your graduate. Everything will be okay. Available now through May 17th. And Judge, are you ready?
Yes. These French bakers were on a roll, breaking the world record for the longest baguette at a whopping 461 feet. The previous record was 30 feet shorter, but better safe than sorry.
All right.
Hallelujah.
Jonathan, next time.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to The Five ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.